Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi-mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone, this is Molly and Matt, and we're the hosts of Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult, a podcast from Ruby Studio and iHeart Podcasts.
It's a show dedicated to helping you figure out the trickiest parts of adulting.
Like how to start planning for retirement, creating a healthy skincare routine, understanding when and how much to tip someone, and so much more.
Let's learn about all of it and then some. Listen to Grown Up Stuff, How to Adult on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Grown Up Stuff. Grown Up Stuff.
Welcome to Money Making Conversations. It's the show that shares the secrets of success experienced firsthand by marketing and branding expert Rashawn McDonald. I will know he's given me advice on many occasions, and in case you didn't notice, I'm not broke. You know he'll be interviewing celebrity CEOs, entrepreneurs, and industry decision makers. It's what he likes to do. It's what he likes to share. Now it's time to hear from my man, Rashawn McDonald. Money Making Conversations. Here we go.
Welcome to Money Making Conversation. I am your host, Rashawn McDonald. I recognize that we all have different definitions of success. For some, it's a sizable paycheck. Mine is helping people wake up and inspiring them to accomplish their goals and live their very best life. These are my passions, and that's what I'm going to do for you. That's why I created Money Making Conversations. I want you to stop tripping over small challenges and prepare to rise above the bigger obstacles that life will present to you. My next guest is Dr. Joseph Asamoah. He is the property investment strategist and president of Capital National Management Corporation. Dr. Joseph is from Ghana and came to America by way of England over 30 years ago with only $100 in his pocket. He now owns over 40 homes that he rents to low-income families. His mission is simple. It's to change lives and provide opportunities for low-income people to live in safer neighborhoods and have access to resources, better education for their children, and beautiful design equity homes. He provides solutions to tackle gentrification and affordable housing issues in unique and very, very effective ways. Please welcome to Money Making Conversation, Dr. Joseph Asamoah.
Rashawn, what an honor. I am so happy to be with you today.
Thank you. I'm going to tell you something. When I read your bio and they told me you'd like to do my show and I can interview you, you know, my show is about uplift. It's about motivation, about letting people know there's a better option for you to live. And that seems to be your mantra, man. It's like, you know, when I looked at everything I read is about how can somebody understand that there's an opportunity that they don't know about. You can give them information, not only for a lifestyle, but an income opportunity to change and value themselves as a better people in America.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing some of my ideas and some of my journeys, trials and tribulations, ups and downs, and hopefully be a source of inspiration for your listeners.
Well, you are a source of inspiration, because when I read that in the beginning, you know, you 30 years ago, $100 in your pocket. And a lot of people start with, you know, that may be a lot of money to some people, because in the era that we live today, in the middle of the pandemic, let's talk about that. Let's start right now with that, because we know housing is a major issue. People are being evicted. CDC did a suspend payment, but come January, you still will have to pay the payments that you missed during that suspension period. How will a guy who rents out to low-income housing, how has that impacted what you're trying to do for the community and the people who are renting from you?
Yeah, I mean, what I found, as I said, housing is a basic human need that everybody needs. And what I realized when I first came here, in fact, the story was, I came here with, I knew one person in the United States. I used to live in England. And when I came here, about 6 weeks after I arrived, my boss was fired. Not because of anything he did wrong. It was just that there was a reorganization. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the new guy that came in, got rid of my boss, and he was let go. So about six or seven weeks later, a few weeks later, we met up for lunch. And this was, in hindsight, probably a major change in my life. Essentially, what he said to me during that lunch, he says, look, this is America. These things happen. And but make sure you have a plan B. Because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And this guy, apparently, he had like 10 houses. And I just couldn't fathom how anybody could have more than one house. It's just like, how is that possible?
Right.
And he just said, look, Joe, if whatever you do, make sure you have a plan B. I chose real estate. But if you do buy something, make sure that you keep it. Don't sell it. And because over the long haul, you'll be fine. Because he had this rental income coming in. Which is able to provide him that sort of cushion because he lost his job. So I knew zero about real estate investing, and I didn't have any money. But I took him at his word. I did some research, and I bought my first house about a couple of years later. A complete disaster. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And I can go through that. But
Jim, when you say everything that could be wrong, could have gone wrong, went wrong. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, in this particular case, the house had tenants inside already. And so when I spoke to him, or the potential person that was buying, the seller of the house, I asked him, what are the tenants like? He said, oh, man, they're great. They're fantastic people. I mean, I was straight from England. All Americans are honest people. So I took him at his word. And after I bought the house, I found out that they hadn't paid him for 3 months. And they had a water bill of $5,000. So that's what that was my first entree into real estate, this disaster. And, but essentially, what happened in the end, I was able to turn that thing around. I didn't know anything and mm-hmm. I was able to turn it around, worked with the tenants and were able to catch everything up. But looking back, that was probably, the best thing that ever happened. Not because, we can laugh about it now. But during the time, it was just pure hell. But what I learned was everything that you're not supposed to do, what not to do. And once I was able to sort of pick myself up, I then bought the second house and then bought the third house and just sort of continued until about 15 years ago when all my, at that time I was working for a major technology company, my income at that company equaled what I was making for my rental properties. So I was able to have that plan B that my ex-boss told me about. So, I mean, that's essentially the journey, is that real estate, it has lots of benefits. It can be a true vehicle towards wealth building. You can create a legacy. You can get cash flow. You can get tax benefits.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Joseph. Because I hear the word plan B, and I just see it, you just became an entrepreneur. All right. You were working for somebody and you just became an entrepreneur. And you used a gift that you have, the ability to see your visionary skills, saying, okay, this is income. Because we see so many popular TV shows on now that kind of talk about flipping homes and buying this home. And they're so popular now. So 30 years ago, that idea wasn't popular. But now it's a TV-friendly show to watch. And so your plan B, like I said, to me, it's just that you just welcomed your role as an entrepreneur. And then you enabled you to be able to walk away from that hourly wage or that 40-hour week job that so many people are strapped to. And so when I see that and I see the opportunity that you present yourself, it's an easy conversation talking about whether I bought one home or bought two homes. When you say buy these homes, did you use personal loans? Did you use income from your bank, savings? How did you initially start buying a home? And then that second home and third, did you leverage the first home? How did this process start to develop?
Yeah, okay. So the first house I bought, the one with that disaster,
right.
The seller, I mean, at the time I was working, the seller at that point was able to, I was able to negotiate with him because he wanted to get rid of that house.
Right.
Whereby essentially I was able to buy that house without much money down. We were able to negotiate a low down payment and I was able to afford that because he was what we call a motivated seller. He just wanted to get rid of that thing.
Right.
Now, the second house, which is probably more important, was that at that time I bought a house specifically whereby I could rent some space in the home. Okay, so it had a basement, which I knew I could sort of rent out. It had three bedrooms upstairs. I lived in one and rented the other two out. So what that meant was that I could buy this home, but my expenses, the biggest expense that most people have is their housing expense. If you're able to drive that thing down to by renting part of the space in a home, then your everyday expenses goes down quite tremendously. So in this case, the income that I was getting from the property essentially equaled the mortgage that I was paying out. And therefore, I was able to save more money. And then I saved and kept on saving. And therefore, by the savings from the second property, I was able to have the down payment for the third property and so on. I don't know if that makes sense. So the idea is that there's two things. One is, okay, if you don't have any money, okay, and you want to get this thing going, then you have several options. One is to obviously you need to either increase your income by having a side hustle or generate some income one way or the other, or you can reduce your expenses. And the biggest expense that most people have is their housing expense. So how can you drive that housing expense lower such that you can save some money from which you can then start? If you don't have that, then the third option is to develop expertise and knowledge. Right. And therefore, you partner with people who do have the resources. Okay, so there's people out there who have money but don't know how to do this. So you have to bring something to the table for them to want to work with you. So you may have the knowledge or you may have the time or the expertise, or you develop that anyway. And then you can partner with people who may not, who have the money but don't have the skills or knowledge. You know,
I remember about 10 years ago, a friend of mine approached me and he was telling me about, you know, we was going into an inner city neighborhood, and he was saying that the city in general wants these neighborhoods upgraded because if you upgrade a block, because he was just talking about it, we went down this block. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to buy these homes here and we're going to upgrade them a little bit. And when we upgrade these homes and fix the street, then the city will be able to raise the tax dollars. And he said, that's why the city likes when you come in and get these neighborhoods upgraded, because they can charge more taxes. Now, when you charge more taxes, then in turn, that means that the people who live in these homes can't afford it. So how does that work with you? Because when you're going in, I'm sure you're taking these homes, you're purchasing them, you're upgrading them. Do the taxes increase on the people or do you pass those tax increases to the renters? How does that work?
Okay. So you buy a house and then you improve it.
Yes.
And then once you improve it, obviously the value has gone up. And most times, as you said before, the tax, the assessments are based on the value of the home. So the taxes may go up. So, I mean, that's just the reality. So what I do is that, I rent most of my houses to low-income families.
Yes.
Many of the families have housing choice vouchers, Section 8, as people commonly refer them to. And one thing I've realized is that there's a lot of families, there's a stigma associated with Section 8 and low-income housing. What I realize is that there's a large number of families out there who are really no different than you and I, Rashawn. They want the best for their children. They don't want to be shot at no more than you want to be shot at. Mm-hmm. They want to have a decent home. They want to live in where access to amenities. They're really no different than you and I. The only difference is that they may not have the money, but their goals, their outlook, their expectations for the children are no different than you and I. So what I realized when I realized this is that if I can provide quality housing in good areas, I can attract those families. And when you get those families, it truly is a blessing, because what happens is that they are so appreciative of the fact that someone is giving them an opportunity to live in a nice house in a nice area. And four things happen. One is that they pay the rent. Two is that they take care of your property. Three, they're pleasant to deal with. And four, which is probably the more important one, they stay a long time. And this business, as I'm sure you know, it's cheaper to keep an existing customer happy than it is to go find another one. So in the space of the real estate environment, it's cheaper to have an existing tenant happy so they stay with you a long time, rather than having the vacancy and turnover when they leave. Because when they leave, you got to paint the place again, you got to clean up and so forth. So therefore, the rents that you collect each month stays in your pocket.
Right.
But the important thing is that you're providing life-changing opportunities, life-changing. I mean, I was speaking to one of my tenants last week, just by the fact that she moved into one of my properties. Two of her kids have got 4.0 GPAs.
Wow.
They're going to college, full scholarships. And this would not have happened if they weren't in a better area. This would not have happened if those opportunities didn't present themselves to you. So, I mean, that's really the other side of things. You can make money, but also you can do good.
That's what you stated in your earlier. Your mission is to change lives, provide opportunities for low-income people to live in safer neighborhoods and have access to resources and better education. That's what always angers me about racism, because racism makes it seem like people who don't have, or people of color who don't have, want to steal, want to sell drugs, want to bring down the value of a neighborhood because they move into that neighborhood. And that's really, like you said, a horrible stereotype that you have to deal with when you're meeting people who just want the same value and the same opportunity.
Exactly. The larger context is, at least in Washington, D.C., I'm sure it's the same thing where you are, and many of your listeners are, neighborhoods are being transformed, okay, being changed, okay, through gentrification. Now, that's just the reality, at least in Washington, D.C., it's just rampant. In neighborhoods where many years ago you say, who the hell want to live there? Now you can't get there. You can't get in. It's changed. For example, when you know, one of the blocks where I used to live in Washington, D.C., when I was there, that block was 100% black, African-American. Now that block is 100% white. There's only one family on that block that's African-American, and that is my tenant. If I didn't keep that home and provide that opportunity to that family, they wouldn't be there. So the idea is that, through what we can do, you and I and so forth, we can mitigate some of the effects of gentrification, which is displacement. We understand these families. We know what they're trying to accomplish, and we can sort of have an insight and really understanding to give them a chance, to give them opportunities. And
that's true. That's very true.
You know,
that's very true.
So they can hopefully. Yeah.
And that's why I brought up that whole statement about, you know, when you upgrade a neighborhood or you upgrade a house, then the taxes go up. And then guess what? The people who live in that sometimes have to move out. Or in your situation that you was explaining about, it's the same thing happened in Harlem. You go to Harlem right now. I remember when I first moved up to New York, you couldn't catch a cab to Harlem. Now you walk to Harlem at 2 o'clock in the morning, the white people walk around with their dogs, you know, at 125th Street. And that's no joke. And it's like, okay, this is like, okay, you know, you go other than Showtime, other than Apollo Theater, Harlem is pretty much white up there. You know, people argue that case with me, but go up there and hang out, because I know I lived in New York. I moved to New York in 88. I moved back there in 2005, and it was just two different neighborhoods. But along the way, I would always go up there either to perform or to visit television show pitches or visit people that I know. And you see these communities change that are 100% minority or 100% black. Now, they can't even live in the neighborhoods that they were born in. They can't even live in the neighborhoods that they grew up in because of the fact that the low income has been pushed out, and been pushed out because value has outsourced their ability to have income to pay for it. So when I listen to you saying, like, black and low income family lives do matter, given an opportunity to live in high income gentrified areas that you just mentioned, they normally could never afford by utilizing the recession proof formula. What is that recession proof formula that you're talking about?
Sure. The thing about some of these sort of like the Housing Choice Voucher Program or the Section 8 program, it's a program whereby part of the rent is paid by the housing authority, the local housing authority, and the remainder is paid by the tenant. Okay. So, for instance, I'll just give an example. If the rent for this property is $1,000, for example, which is not the case in New York, it's not the case in Washington, D.C., but just for easy numbers, if the rent is $1,000 for your home, then you may decide, well, the housing authority may pay, let's say, $600 of that. And the tenant's portion may be $400. And the tenant's portion is based on their income. So the more money they made, the more that they pay. The less money they made, the less that they pay. Okay, so let's just take a simple scenario. $1,000 rent, $600 is paid by the housing authority, and $400 is paid by the tenant. The reason why it's recession-proof is that if the tenant loses their income, loses their job or whatever it is, then typically what will happen is that they'll go to the housing authority and their portion will go down because their income has gone down. So it may go from 400 to 200. And therefore the housing authority picks up the difference. So their portion will go from 600 to 800. The $1,000 is still the same. It's just that the breakdown of that $1,000 will change.
Right.
So in a recession, when people lose their income, or people have their hours cut and things like that, what happens is that they may not be able to pay you, and therefore you would lose that whole $1,000. Okay. If I was rented to let's say a market renter, if they lost their job or lost their hours, they may not be able to pay the $1,000. But with a housing authority tenant, the Section 8 tenant, their portion will go from 400 to 200. So I will still get the 800 from the housing authority, and the tenant's responsible for the 200. So you are essentially going to get most of your rent, if not all of your rent, regardless of the economic cycle that you're in.
And that's basically what you're saying is that these individual rental kind of like almost have a built-in government plan that allows you to get your rent paid, a portion of it paid at least, no matter what's going on, no matter during the pandemic, no matter during the reception, you pretty much can stay afloat with the tenant that you have versus a person who may get laid off from a job, a person who may get fired, may get terminated, due to illness, and they have no income, then the rent that you could potentially get from that person is zero, correct?
Yes. So I have some tenants who the rents are zero, and some of them are $100, $200, or whatever it is. So, you know, their portion, again, is based on the income that they make. But right. The key, though, is that these are nice homes in nice areas. These families they want to stay there.
Right.
And so they're in no rush to leave. And, you know, in this business, you know, I can't really stress this. Certain neighborhoods, certain areas, certain cities, certain geographies, over time, the prices of houses go up. And, you know, as you said, in New York and Atlanta, and so over time, the houses go up. Therefore, if you can buy this house or this asset and keep it for a long time, then the price will go up. And that's wealth, that's legacy, that's income, that's cash flow that you can obviously leave as a legacy to your family, your children, and, you know, and you can pass on.
Like my father used to tell me, they're not going to make any more land. Once you buy that land, then it's something that you can own and build on. And like you said, a legacy part of it. But in 2018, Joe, you formed the Legacy Investment Network. It's a free community membership platform. And basically everybody is comprised of nearly 1,000 investors and industry professionals who have access to your expertise. So tell us about the Legacy Investment Network that you formed in 2018, Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, the pie is big enough for everybody. Okay, it doesn't matter if Rashawn does what I do. It doesn't matter if, you know, the pie is, there's enough for everybody. And so what I realized, you know, is that whenever I have a house for rent, I'm getting 12, 13, 14 applications. So I'm turning down 10, 12, 13 people, families who are yearning for this opportunity. So I cannot meet the need. It's just not possible. It's not possible. So therefore, you know, my whole idea is what can I do to encourage other people to replicate what I'm doing? And so that's essentially the genesis of the network is that I try to help people, educate people, share with them what I'm doing, give them the opportunity to see what I'm doing, and hopefully give them the inspiration and encouragement to replicate what I'm doing. And that's essentially what it is, because you cannot meet the need, Rashawn. Your listeners cannot meet the need. The need is too great. And we need more people to do this, because the analogy is, I see this as like the train is leaving the station. We can sit on the station curb and sort of watch the train leave,
right,
and complain that the train has left, or we can get onto that train and be a, you know, participant on that journey. So my job, I think what I can do is to help people get onto that train. And that's essentially what the Legacy Network does.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, when I look at your academic background, electrical engineering, MBA, PhD, education is important to you. And so, because that tells me that you want other people to have that same opportunity to educate themselves. So when you're telling your story, what do you want people to remember about you, Joseph?
This is a good one. Good question, Rashawn.
I didn't mean, because you're a good talker, Joseph. I didn't mean to stop you now. the reason I say this, let me just back up a little bit and tell you why.
Sure.
Because when I look at a person like you, who's, you know, you come over to this country from England, Ghana born, okay, 30 years ago, and you immediately understand, you see the opportunity, but you're not afraid to investigate the opportunity. Now, like you told me earlier, you said, Rashawn, I knew nothing about real estate, but now you're considered a master in real estate investment. You're considered that. So that means that you made yourself an expert. But then your academic training is in electrical engineering. Okay. And then you got an MBA and then information systems, your PhD. So none of these things have to do with real estate other than the fact that you've taken an opportunity as an entrepreneur and mastered it. And so when I asked you, what do you want people to remember about you? That's the question that I need answered.
No, it's a good one. Let me answer it this way.
Okay.
I was speaking to my mom. Okay. About a few years ago, she's in England, and she was telling me, I'll tell her what I'm doing. She said, when are you going to stop? Why are you doing this? When is enough enough? I mean, you know, just typical mom. She's not an entrepreneur. Why are you doing this? When is enough enough? Haven't you got enough houses? Stop, you know, and so on. And I was just thinking about that because it's a legitimate question. When is enough enough? You know, when do you say it's enough, Rashawn? Mm-hmm. You've accomplished what you need to do. You know, you've done what you can. When is enough enough? And so I realized that what I'm doing essentially is providing opportunities for other families. I'm providing opportunities, hopefully by sharing knowledge to other investors who can get onto do what I do. So if I stop doing what I'm doing, then what about those 10, 12, 13 tenants who I have to turn down? Where are they going to live? And who's going to provide them quality housing in quality areas? Who's going to do what I'm doing? You know, who's going to do it? You know, so the legacy essentially is, hopefully, yes, you can make money, but also you can do good. You can provide, you can be remembered as a person who's provided quality housing. You created opportunities for families, and you've helped other investors, other individuals, especially African American community, build wealth and have a legacy which they can pass on to future generations. Because if we don't do this, these neighborhoods are changing and we are being left behind.
Right.
We have no say in what's going on in our communities. Zero say. We got to own some of these assets. We got to own some of these communities. We got to own it. Because if you don't own it, you're at the mercy of somebody else.
Right.
You know.
You know, your mom question to you is a very natural question because she's thinking from an investment, from an economic standpoint. But she's born to this life, an incredible young man who is more than about money. You're about changing lives, and you're about seeing when you can wake up the next day. This is a question that if she ever asked you that question, this is a response I would give to your mom. I would say, Mom, when I wake up the next day and I don't have to worry about people not equally getting the same opportunities as everybody else in this country, when people feel that their child can get equally educated and live in a neighborhood that's comfortable to them, when they don't have to worry about being rejected because of the color of their skin, then that will be enough. Will be enough then, Mom. But right now, it's not enough. And people like you, Joseph Asamoah, are important to the chain of opportunity for all of us. Because I always tell people, you know, if you give me a break, I'm a person of color. Guess what? You're going to win too. That means that I'm pursuing the same dream. I'm paying the same taxes. I'm going to work and I'm putting forth the same effort that you want to put to make this country great. If we make this country great together, then we all win. And that is what you're trying to accomplish. And you are accomplishing. I should put the word try in it. Okay, you are accomplishing that. And I'm a teammate too, and that's why I wanted to bring you on the show, Joseph. That's all. That's all.
Let me tell what I do, okay? In addition, you know, what I realize is that there are two assets in what I do. There's the real estate asset.
Yes, sir.
But the other asset, which is the human asset, the family, okay? It's a very, very, very important asset in this equation, because without them, you can't do this business. A lot of landlords fail to understand that. So what I do is I realize that I've got to have happy tenants. And all my tenants, every Mother's Day, we give them bouquets of flowers. Every Christmas, we give them Christmas presents. If the kids get all A's at school, I give them $50 gift certificates. And believe it or not, we give our tenants free vacations.
Wow. Wow. That's hot.
I love my tenants. I love this business. They're good families out here, despite the stereotypes. They're just yearning for somebody to give them an opportunity and a chance. And so there are two sides to this thing, is that you can do good, but also you can make money. But more importantly, as I said, you can leave a legacy and to your children, your family, and for your community.
Well, my friend, thank you for coming on the show. Like I told you earlier off air, I'm building a new studio. I'm going to have a giant video wall, because all my interviews are going to be by video starting next month. So in the month of December, since you out there passing out Christmas presents to your landlord, to your renters, I wanted you to bring it back on the show, and maybe we bring a tenant or two. You know, we'll zoom them into the call. How about that?
Love it.
We invite a couple of your tenants on, and they'll talk about the experience, man, because, you know, that's what I want to do. I want to tell you a story, man. And your story, this is just an introduction to your story, but let's peel it back a little bit more in the month of December, and doing a Zoom call, we're bringing a couple of more of your tenants, and just talk about how you've changed your life. Thank you for coming on the show.
Sure. Yeah, if anybody can connect to me, I do have a Wealth Wednesdays every Wednesday on my social media. Okay. So they can reach me on Instagram or Facebook, Dr. Dr. Joe Asamoah, Joe Asamoah. Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, I do have what I call the Wealth Wednesdays.
Okay.
And so they can tune in, and I talk about different subjects, all pertains to building wealth and generations and so forth. So check me out.
The good thing about that is my newsletter goes out on Wednesdays morning at 9 o'clock in the morning. And so I put that in my newsletter. I get with my team to get a banner and get some links so we can promote
it. Thank you.
Okay. And also, you might see a familiar face. I might drop in and watch you. How about that?
Hey, Rashad, I also, I don't know if you've heard of this platform called Bigger Pockets. Mm-hmm. Bigger Pockets, they're the world's largest real estate social media platform. I do have a program on there every other Friday, and it's a national platform. So I'd welcome the opportunity to maybe one day, if you're not too busy.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'm telling you, Joseph, based on what you do, man, I make time. What you're doing, I love you, dude, because you're doing things that I've been doing since I was 18, and I didn't realize what I was doing was just natural to me. And you're doing things that are natural to you. And you're not embarrassed by that. You say, hey, man, I'm making money, but I'm also changing lives. I'm also leaving legacy. I'm also understanding that you can do this too. Also, there's room for other people. I want other people to come in, because guess what? More people means more people's lives are changed by the same effort, the same mission statement. So that's what you tell my staff when you need me. You send me those banners so I can promote your Wednesday show. And Joseph, you'll be back on my show December with a couple of your tenants, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, man.
This has been a wonderful, thank you again for the opportunity. And I can now die in peace.
All right. I appreciate you, brother.
I spoke it to the man, the legend.
All right, I appreciate you, brother. Bye-bye, man. You stay safe, okay?
Take care, guys. Thank you.
If you want to hear more Money Making Conversations interviews, please go to moneymakingconversation.com. I'm Rashad McDonald. I'm your host.